Hello, artists. It's Katherine Ziegler with the Acting for Your Life podcast, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 2. So glad you could tune in. We want to thank you for sharing the podcast the way you've been sharing it. We are consistently rated in the top 5 podcasts for performing artists on the Podomatic.com platform. We are also gaining a huge following on SoundCloud and, of course, on iTunes. We've been on iTunes since the beginning of the program 5 years ago. We're also celebrating going into the 11th year of the Acting for Your Life program, the Life and Career Balance and Training Series, and we just couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much for sharing the podcast and the Acting for Your Life program. We're excited to be here for you to help you find balance in life and career. Well, today's Wise Words Wednesday's guest is certainly not a stranger in my household. It's Todd Ziegler, Director of Communications and Content for Acting for Your Life. Before coming to Acting for Your Life and working for the company, Todd was actually a student of the program and studied with me for several years. It's been an exciting journey to build Acting for Your Life with him and to see his additions, having been a student of the program and now teaching with the program and also publishing his very successful and very much praised blog on the Acting for Your Life platform. You can always read Todd's blogs at actingforyourlife.com. That's acting, the number 4, yourlife.com. We recorded our interview at our kitchen table, so you're going to hear some dogs in the background. You may even hear our newborn baby squeak every now and then because I was feeding her at the time that we did the interview. But we wanted to welcome you into our home, and I wanted to personally introduce you to Todd. We join the interview as Todd is explaining how he found his love of performance and the stage. So here is part one of my interview with Todd Ziegler.
I got started very, very early. My first performance on stage was actually in kindergarten. It was a bit of an inauspicious debut because I was below the stage with holding up a popsicle stick version of Father Christmas in a play about how France celebrates Christmas. And I toddled in, dropped off some clogs under the tree, said, "I hope Marie and Pierre like the gifts I have brought for them," and toddled off stage.
Well, we all have to start somewhere, right?
Exactly.
How did you know this is something that you wanted to do? I mean, was it as early as that play? Did you like being on stage or under the stage, as it were?
It was fun. I was more of a spectator for a long time. I read comics. My favorite movie is and always will be Superman. I wore out the VHS when I was little. For most of my youth, I was more of a sports kid. I was mostly a soccer player, baseball occasionally, but was more on the athletic side of things until I got to high school. Mm-hmm. And that's really where it took off for me. My sophomore year, I went to see my best friend in the Kentucky Cycle. Our school was putting on that play. What really attracted my attention to the stage was a scene where one of the boys kissed one of the girls. And I said, "You can do that? I'm in." I was kind of a late bloomer in that respect. But I found it interesting and joined the drama club and started taking some of the classes the school offered. But I found it really engaging to take on these personas because I'd played pretend like most kids do when they're younger and had, you know, pretend sword fights, playing Thundercats in the front yard or playing Superman or with my action figures or whatever. So that I think that germ had always been there of I want to play make-believe because it's fun, but to get up on stage to do it with other people who were engaged and very good at it and do it for an audience who wanted to see it and enjoy it and laugh and cry and gasp and applaud, that was kind of the icing on the cake, that this is really exciting.
Well, like many creatives, I mean, you didn't just limit yourself to acting. You also, you're a drummer, you're in a band, and you're also a fantastic writer. In fact, you majored in journalism in college. Tell people about that.
That's right. Of course, I got the speech that most of us probably got. You need to do something practical with your life. And first and foremost, I was a writer. That's just what's in my soul and in my DNA and on my fingerprints. I'm a writer first and foremost. And I took up journalism at the University of Georgia with drama as a minor. I took the 101 classes for acting, history of theater, stagecraft, screenwriting, got kind of a broad overview of everything in terms of the performing arts for my minor. On the journalism side, I joined the school newspaper and became an arts writer, so I got to cover mostly music at the time, which being a drummer and in a band was my primary passion, but got to see a fair bit of the school's productions of plays and got exposed to Beckett, Pinter, a fair amount of really classic plays and saw them really well produced and went, okay, this is still interesting. I never got on stage. I was too nervous to audition for anything at the time, but it never really went away as far as the theater bug. And I graduated from college and got a job up in here in Louisville, Kentucky, actually on the business side of thing, just like my drama minor. My mindset has always been, I want to get the broad overview of anything I'm involved in. I want to know it inside and out. And while majoring on the writing side, the company that owns the newspaper here had a program for training in circulation, delivery, and sales of newspapers. And I thought, hey, why not? It's 3 years. I'll give it a shot. If I don't like it, I'll try something else. So that is what brought me up to Louisville, Kentucky.
After your grand performance in kindergarten, so you've been performing again as a drummer, and that's a performance in and of itself. Let's actually talk about that for a second, because I've really enjoyed watching drumming from a performance perspective with you, because there is a rhythm, of course, a rhythm to it, but there's also there's breathing, there's posture. A lot of the things that we go through as actors, the training that we go through, you can see that in a really great drummer and really great performances. What is that like to perform as a drummer for you?
It is very similar in a lot of ways to acting. Like you're talking about, there is a lot of technique considerations and all that. And that's something I'm totally self-taught as far as drums. I've taken one lesson. I still can't do what the teacher asked me to do in that lesson. It's still a mystery to me. But I learned by watching, largely. But the drummers I was interested in, I'm a huge Rush fan. Neil Peart is God. Some of the other drummers, like Dave Weckl, who's a jazz fusion drummer, Steve Smith, who was the drummer on most of Journey's big hits, they all studied with a common teacher who was very, very cognizant, very conscientious about proper technique, proper posture, proper breathing, proper use of the mechanics of your body and the ergonomics of how you sit, how your arms and how your legs move. And they would put these on instructional DVDs, and you could see it in their performance. So even though I was totally just winging it as far as learning and learning by watching them, I guess kind of secondhand, roughly was picking up a lot of those considerations of how to do it properly. And their big focus, and I think is the thrust of most acting instruction that I've encountered, is use your instrument, which is your body, your breathing, your voice, to cultivate those things in order to put them aside when it's time to perform, to just let the art, let the music, let the rhythm, let the character come through you in a way that you're getting out of your own way. So there was some connectivity there, and I still try to use it to this day when I'm rehearsing with the band that I'm in now and performing with them. I try to just get out of my own way and just really feel the music, because the drummer is the backbone of what happens with especially a rock band, but any band. I think guitarists, bassists, they can flub notes. If the drummer screws up, he's what you're going to notice, and he's the one driving the train, is what a lot of them, the professionals, say. So I really try to take ownership of that and be cognizant of that when I get on stage to play a concert, and also play with some other musicians, like the interplay with actors. When you're on stage working with somebody and creating a scene, you're creating a song with a group of people. You're not just up there in isolation playing along to a CD. You're creating art together.
But you used the word backbone, and I think that is a really interesting word for you to use, because knowing your career the way that I do, you became the backbone of a local theater company, and knowing how you like the ins and outs and to learn everything about that, you were the artistic director for the Alley Theater here locally for a period of time. And what drew you to artistic direction? What was that like for you? Because you had you directed a play that you cast me in, so thank you very much.
You were great.
The Last Days of Judas Iscariot, and I came in at the very last minute, and was that the very first full stage play that you'd ever directed?
That was the first one I had directed from start to finish. I had remounted one the Alley had done earlier as a, hey, let me see if I have a talent for this, for putting a whole show together from that side of things. And I thought, okay, I'm drawn to this show and its themes and its ideas. Let's see if I can do it. And it started actually the backbone of things, and looking at theater as a whole, not just for the onstage part with a company prior to that, Louisville Repertory Company. That was a community theater group locally, and the job, obviously, that falls to any group is pick your plays, find out where you're going to do them, all of that. And I really jumped onto that side of things, too, of, okay, what's our identity? What's our season going to be like? So I would start reading plays and submitting them, and I took on producing responsibilities, set design, hunting costumes, like we all do. Mm-hmm. When we're doing community theater at that level, everyone has to do the jobs, whether they like it or not. But I really flock to that idea of having a hand in the overall production. Transitioning to the Alley, I was given really just a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different things by the people in charge there. I brought that show to them, Judas Iscariot, and said, I'd like to do this. They said, okay, we'll put it in the season. And a lot of what was going on in my mind doing that was I want to try things. I got a minor in drama in school. That was as far as my formal education extended for a long period of time, and I got into this in Louisville largely to develop a social scene, because I was brand new to town, to develop my social circuit. But I was really drawn to the art form, and I thought, well, I'm doing this kind of on my own by the seat of my pants, and I'm not going to be brilliant at it. I'm just going to take to this and see what I can learn by doing it. The Alley gave me a lot of opportunity to do that, to be in a play, to play in a musical, to direct something. And then the next opportunity that came along was to be an associate artistic director and schedule a play festival we came up with. Here in Louisville, we have the Humana Festival of New American Plays, which is world renowned for finding new artists, new playwrights, and really revolutionizing theater year by year. Well, the funny way my brain works and the way sort of a fringe avant-garde pop culture theater works, we came up with the Inhumana Festival, which was zombies and vampires and undead theater. And the artistic director said, hey, that's a neat idea. Let's give it a shot. So I took a shot at putting a play festival together. And just little by little, these opportunities came my way. And I said, sure, I'll give it a try. Becoming artistic director was sort of a bit of a sea change at the time the decision was made. Jobs in the theater, we were sort of turnover with the staffing. We were diversifying a bit. And the artistic director, Scott Davis, wanted to focus on some other avenues with the theater. He had a lot to do with building the space we were in. So he said, give this a shot. So I took a shot at designing a whole season, put in some of what the Alley was known for with pop culture oriented things, but also throwing in something like a Judas Iscariot, something that's a little more on the artistic side, but a little newer or edgier, or something that doesn't get put on a lot. Getting onto that side of things on the artistic directorship side was just another challenge at the time.
As with all life and career, you know, balance, we talk about with Acting for Your Life, you had a lot of life challenges as well. We both went through almost at the same time two divorces. Their experiences were vastly different in terms of that and our relationships, but that can always be stressful. And when you've got life looming in on you and you've got career choices that you're trying to make, and you were working for a local newspaper here, what was your life and career balance like for you when you were taking on all these responsibilities, plus you had, you know, the stress of having your own home and your own family at the time?
Well, my approach to life and career balance was to load up both sides as heavy as possible to see if they would just balance out or if the center would just break in half. For several years, my life side of my balance was part-time jobs. This was right in the middle of the Great Recession, so work and steady work was very hard to come by. I'd work nights, I'd work part-time, I would work support jobs, and just do what we could to keep afloat. At the time, and that was, you know, heartbreaking and hard as any relationship breaking off can be, I really threw myself into the theater side of things. That was right about the time I was made artistic director. And so I would joke while I was doing that, hey, my office hours are 3 to 4 a.m. Stop on by if you need to see me. And started to live at the theater, really.
Did that serve you well, that lifestyle? Because a lot of artists, and I did the same thing. And any time that I'm stressed, and you've probably noticed this, I really pour myself into my work creatively. And sometimes that can serve you really well because it can be really cathartic and you can go through this process and it gives you an outlet. But sometimes not so much.
It had its blessings and it had its curses. I got to work with people who became my friends, brilliant people, funny people who were a joy to be around. And the one thing I think I'm most proud of from my time being an artistic director is I got to give a lot of people opportunities that they might not have found at other theaters in town. People got to direct who had never directed before. People got to do roles that were exciting in the Alley does movie adaptations, and they got to play a role that they've seen their hero play, and they're, oh, I'd love to play that role, so they got a chance to do it. I got a lot out of being at the theater. I got to put on a show with you, actually, which was sort of the culmination of my time as artistic director, was all the Who's in Whoville, which was a Christmas special. We did a Doctor Who, Dr. Seuss mashup Christmas special, and I wrote it, I cast it, I chose a brilliant director, and it was everything that a creative person could possibly want out of something. It got recognition from the BBC, sold out just about every show.
Lots of fans coming to that show. Lots of Doctor Who fans and people talking about it. I mean, you were invited actually to be on the fan panel for Wizard World. The convention came to Louisville and you got to do that, which was, as your director, it was amazing, and it was a wonderful thing to see you get the recognition from the fans of the show. Someone had asked a question and you asked the audience, well, how many of you came to see Whoville? And a large portion of this, you know, 2,000 person crowd, woo, yay! And the look on your face was just, wow, I reached that many people, it touched that many lives, you know, and then you got an opportunity to do one of the monologues, and seeing something like that come to fruition from, you know, a community theater type group, and seeing that
kind of a reaction. It was really rewarding as the director to see, and I'm sure it was amazing for you as the writer.
It really was, to be on a fan panel that's just there to talk about a TV show and to be asked about the show you did and to do a bit from it and talk about putting it together. It's like, I don't want to take up too much time to talk about me when we're talking about the TV show, but let's talk about me. It was neat. It was just so validating in every way it could possibly be. So those were the wonderful sides of doing that at that time. At the same time, as like I said, there are blessings and there are curses. It just took it out of me. I got in.
Took it meaning energy or time?
Energy, time. At some point, it got to be a health concern. After the show closed, it actually made the theater enough money that it was able to move to a different spot in town. It was sort of off on the fringe side of town, hard to find. Ended up moving right to the middle of the entertainment and museum district in town. So we had a new theater to build, and at the time my health really just started deteriorating, and I actually ended up in the emergency room at one point with horrible chest pains and all this. We went to different specialists and nobody could figure out why, and I think reflecting back on it, the culmination of it was basically my body was just saying, you've been doing this 10 years nonstop. You have been through hell on the personal side. I've had enough. So my body just kind of shut down on me briefly and said, you need to take a break. So
you had no balance. It was all poured onto one side. There was no taking care of you and taking care of life stuff. Although we had a wonderful home and you were a fantastic father to our girls, you were just all work. All work, and not only all work and no play, but just all work.
Exactly. It became very much work. And blessings coming when they do. At the time, I was lucky that we had found each other and were starting to build a relationship in which I had you, not only as a student of yours, but as a friend and now and then as a partner, to say, you need to take a break. We need to focus on what's going wrong, which thankfully we did. Mm-hmm. So I stepped away for a full year. I haven't been on stage since Whoville, and we've taken the time to sort of balance out and start a little family.
It's interesting because your story is going to ring true, which is why I wanted you to tell it. It's going to ring true with so many artists because we do pour ourselves so much into our craft that we forget that we have to take care of ourselves in order to do it more. We also have to take the time and step back, and sometimes we have to take a break from it so that it can still be play and we can still have a passion for it as opposed to an obligation to it.
And that concludes part one of my interview with Todd Ziegler. Tune in tomorrow for part two. You can always find us here at the Acting for Your Life website. That's acting4yourlife.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Acting for Your Life and on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is acting4yourlife. Tune in to hear part two of Todd's interview tomorrow. And also, you can check out all of the other podcast interviews and motivational podcasts that we have by going to our website and clicking on the podcast and YouTube link at the top of the page. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you have any questions, please feel free to email us at acting4yourlife@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Now go out there and break some legs.